Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab. Adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
We have to wonder whether or not Sean Bell was killed by police officers because they were trying to make that final arrest before the operation was shut down.
If they don't make an arrest today in Queens, they'll make an arrest another day in another borough. So I think it's irrelevant.
Advocates on either side of the Sean Bell police shooting trial, which wraps up its first week today in Queens, WNYC's Arun Venugopal has been in the courtroom and joins me now. Good morning, Arun.
Good morning, Brian.
So yesterday, two of Sean Bell's friends testified that Bell got into an argument with another guy when he left Club Kahlua around 4 a.m., and that argument included references to a gun. Who were the witnesses, and what did they say?
Two men by the name of Hugh Jensen and Lorenzo Kinred. His nickname is Red. And they both essentially said that they did, in fact, see this man who was outside the club at 4 a.m. Sean Bell got into what they called a verbal altercation that lasted a few minutes. Neither of them could say or would say what was said, but essentially they both did see that this man was holding his hand, either one hand or both his hands, in his pockets, as if suggesting that, you know, he has a gun in there and that basically, you know, he wasn't a guy to be messed with. So that went on for a few minutes, and it came off as fairly strong evidence, if anything, for the defense, who's been arguing that there was this whole dangerous atmosphere in the air, and that may have led, you know, them to believe that there was a gun, that Sean Bell and friends were going to get a gun for themselves.
Well, atmosphere, you know, is one thing, and imminent danger is another. And I've heard other people say, too, that these witnesses may bolster the case of the accused officers because it adds credence to their claim that there was a gun somewhere on the scene. But one could also argue that this bolsters the prosecution because it was testified to, and correct me if I'm wrong, that this man drove away from the scene without incident, ultimately, before any of the police fire took place.
That's true. They both seem to suggest, these witnesses suggested that he got into his SUV, this black SUV, and he slowly drove past them. He kind of glared at them and just drove on. The police, of course, are saying that are suggesting so far that Sean Bell and his friends may have said that, you know, let's go get our gat or our gun or our burner, various slang terms for gun, and that this is sort of like what they're getting at, is that even if they were just talking trash, they were just sort of like, it was all bluster, that they were going back to their vehicle after this exchange and they had a gun there. So you're right. I mean, it's unclear, you know, as to whether this particular event, you know, became anything more than just sort of a momentary kind of friction or whatever. But
well, why do you think prosecutors called these two and had them tell that story? Obviously, they, you know, unless there's a fix in, they wouldn't do anything to hurt their own case.
Yeah, I mean, I must say that the defense has been pretty aggressive. They seem to have pulled out what seemed to be some contradictions or some lapses between what these witnesses said in their grand jury statements and what was said in the last couple of days. I think they wanted to, in one sense, kind of rebut the claim that Sean Bell was, you know, drunk and disorderly. He was, you know, acting aggressively and just looking for trouble. That's been sort of what the prosecution has been trying to do this week, basically saying he was in a good mood, he was happy, and none of them had guns. They were all frisked at the door. That's been another theme that's been running through these last few days. But I do think that the defense, you know, they've got three lawyers really prying apart these statements. They're trying to discredit these witnesses, say these are all drug dealers, you know, they all have multiple convictions, and that they're basically, in some sense, collaborating on their testimony in here.
And if you listeners have any questions about the evidence so far in the Sean Bell police shooting trial, give us a call, 212-433-WNYC. Arun Venugopal has been covering the case in the courtroom for WNYC, 212-433-9692, with your questions and comments on the evidence so far. Also testifying yesterday was the lieutenant in charge of the operation that night, Gary Napoli. Napoli presumably would not be friendly to the prosecution. Why did they put him on the stand?
Well, I think that's a good question. I mean, I think that basically he gives a good window into this operation known as this Club Enforcement Initiative, this nightclub initiative, which was meant to basically be sweeping down on nightclubs, which had histories of prostitution and drug sales. There are some hints that was happening here. In fact, just a few days before the night of Sean Bell's death, they had apparently swept down on the same club, made a couple arrests, prostitution and drug sale arrests, and they were, you know, hoping to sort of shut down the club that night with one more arrest. So the prosecution is saying this was an aggressive effort. They were just looking for that one last caller, as they said, and this operation was sort of on its last legs, and so that's what the prosecution also is hoping to say, that basically this is kind of this tale of carelessness verging into incompetence, as they say. This whole squad was really, basically about to, lose their jobs, essentially, and about to be
disbanded, wanting this one more arrest on either drug or prostitution charges, so they would have the three needed to shut Club Kahlua down before the unit was disbanded, so that maybe they were pushing too hard for something that wasn't there, and that wound up in this tragedy. And I guess also trying to show that the lieutenant, bungled this command in a way that contributed to the incident. Michael Daly, in his Daily News column today, I don't know if you saw it, he says morally, Napoli should also be a defendant. Why isn't he, if his behavior was as negligent or as incompetent as the officers who were under his command?
I'm not sure. I mean, as you might remember, there were two other officers who were at the scene who actually shot as well, who were not indicted. I think this is going to be one of those kind of key issues as to, to the extent to which the NYPD, in a sense, is accused of bungling this whole scenario, and perhaps whether that will in fact help the defendants, because if this will pull them off the case, is saying this is a largely procedural problem that kind of transcended the actions of these individual officers. But yes, Napoli, we're going to have to hear more. He just testified a little today. He's going to hear a lot more from him today as to the details of that night and the operation. But he did say that, he wasn't even funded well, that he basically had to pull money out of his own ATM account so he could sort of get the buy money, as they call it, $270 for that night, in case they had, prostitution deals or drug deals that went down.
Wow.
So it was kind of... It appears to be in a shambles. Even the paperwork from that night, which they started going through, they were projecting this onto these big flat screen TVs in the courtroom, the paperwork, and it looked like there were a lot of empty spaces, and it looked kind of a little sloppy.
Could this witness for the prosecution also potentially help the defense? Because if they show that Napoli misdirected the officers he was commanding during the incident, could the defendants claim they were placed in this compromising position where they thought they needed to open fire but didn't because of a bungling supervisor?
Yeah, I don't know. The nuances of the legal arguments that are going to play out in that respect. To what extent they can distance themselves, or really whether finally they are still responsible for their own actions. But we definitely have heard so far that this is not a well managed operation. And at the same time, we're hearing that. Some very confusing testimony coming from some of these witnesses as to what exactly they saw that night, whether they in fact actually witnessed the incident, the shooting. It's been a little disorienting because you're hearing these different things coming from each of the witnesses, and you don't know whether they are being completely upfront about what they saw. And that's partly what the defense is sort of suggesting so far, is that these witnesses are really not willing to be completely honest.
WNYC's Arun Venugopal covering the Sean Bell police shooting trial. And Hal in Westchester, you're on WNYC. Hello, Hal.
Hi, good morning. I have a question that I've never heard asked or answered, and I don't know if you know the answer to it, but the police have stated they thought that Bell and his people had a gun in their car. So the question is, why would they let them get in the car? That's number one. And number two, procedurally, isn't a person in a car much more dangerous than a person not in a car? And I wonder if any of those questions have been raised at trial yet.
No, I don't think those issues have been raised yet. You know, there's a lot more witnesses to come up. But as far as the gun goes, the thing is that one thing we're going to see is basically the defense start trying to figure out whether, for instance, one of the men, they've already been hinting at this, that one of the men that night in the party probably snuck a gun into the club or snuck it out of there, and maybe there was, you know, maybe we'll revisit that fourth man theory where there was a man who had a gun who escaped, maybe even this man Bones, who's known as Harold James, a friend of Sean's that night. We'll also see, as far as the car goes, yes, I think that's what the police are going to be saying, is that, you know, going into the atmosphere that night on that street, they kind of drove around the corner to basically corner Sean Bell and his friends in their car, and that if they thought that this was a very dangerous scenario where a man in the car had a gun, then they, in fact, were not confronting just some helpless men, but men who might have wanted to shoot them back. So yes, the car acted potentially in their account as a dangerous weapon. It was something that was actually aimed at them, trying to kill these officers.
Thank you, Hal. Dwight on Staten Island. You're on WNYC. Hello, Dwight.
Hi, good morning. I just had a quick comment with regard to the quality of the case that the DA has put on so far, the prosecution. I always found it strange that the DA in Queens waited till after his reelection, pushing out bringing charges, pushing out the grand jury proceedings, pushing out actually going to court with this. And it just really seems suspect to me that the case that the prosecution is putting on is so weak thus far. It kind of makes you wonder, if you're into conspiracy theories, which I'm not necessarily, but it makes you wonder if they're doing this on purpose, like they're fumbling.
Well, Arun, any evidence that the prosecution is intentionally putting on a weak case?
I'm not sure I can really make that leap. I do think, though, at the same time, that the defense is being much more aggressive. It definitely seems to be kind of taking charge of the witnesses so far. But beyond that, I'm not really sure I can comment.
Right. Of course, you have to take a long view of these things. This is just the beginning of the trial. And I don't know if you can see in the first week the outline of the larger case the prosecution is trying to make, or is it just still too early?
It is early, I think. There's just so many more witnesses. I'm told there are, you know, by one or two people, they're expecting about 50 witnesses. And so far, we've got, you know, maybe 7 or 8 of those have come through. So it can be many more weeks before, you know, the end of the trial.
Another witness this week was a dancer at the strip club who was outside when the shooting occurred. She testified that she did not hear anyone identify himself as a police officer to Sean Bell and his passengers. Why is that significant?
Well, basically, you know, it comes down to the crux of the case as to whether Jess Gard is Nora, the undercover that night, whether when he confronted, this is the police account, so that he, in fact, you know, confronted them, flashed his badge, said, "I'm a police officer," and, you know, basically told him to stop. And she says that she didn't see anything like that. Now, at the same time, some problems have emerged with her testimony because, well, as the defense sort of exposed, she didn't say anything to the police that first day after the incident. She herself kind of came forth where she said, "I didn't want to say nothing to anybody," basically, you know, and she kind of like, you know, was sobbing and sort of screaming at the same time at the defense attorney under a cross-examination saying, you know, "I'm a single mother, I've got two kids, trying to make something of my life, and I don't need this drama." But, you know, that kind of revealed perhaps some inconsistencies with her testimony now, and whether, in fact, she's, you know, a completely, you know, I guess, a creditable witness.
This is a trial by judge, not a trial by jury, as has gotten a lot of publicity, as the defendants were allowed to choose. How active a role is the judge playing in the case so far?
You know, he's probably said like 12 words the whole trial. He's
very, really?
He's very quiet, very stern, kind of scary-looking man. He looks like, you know, like the grandfather, you don't want to displease, I guess. He's kind of just very serious-looking man, says very little. Somehow it's worked. I mean, you know, nobody in the courtroom has really made too much of a fuss. There's not any kind of rabble-rousing of any type going on in there. So I think everybody's a little scared of him.
Is he showing any signs of credulity or skepticism toward any of the witnesses or the lawyers?
He definitely, there are those moments where, you know, he makes his single word comments in terms of overruling or sustaining certain challenges to testimony, but he has not, you know, he hasn't been too vocal, I would say.
All right, well, this is just the end of week one. How many weeks is this expected to last?
I've heard a couple estimates in terms of 6 to 8 weeks. People said that, you know, that's going to be a little shorter because it is a judge, and but, you know, you've got these three defense attorneys who are each cross-examining each of the witnesses, and then he goes back to, you know, redirect questioning from the prosecution, goes back and forth. So some days you just get to, you know, a couple witness, two and a half. I mean, we've only had 3 days so far, but some days it seems to creep along very slow, and they're parsing every word. So, we can expect that when people like Joe Guzman, Trent Benefield come up, it's going to be, you know, excruciatingly slow and detailed questioning.
WNYC's Arun Venugopal in the courtroom this week, covering the first week of the Sean Bell trial. Thanks a lot for joining us.
Thank you,
Brian. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Stay with us. Coming up, race. And hints of racism now in the presidential race.